Our attitude on trade changes when countries do not take international security threats seriously.
A vow of increased U.S. pressure on North Korea. It's Monday, July 10th. This is VOA Asia. Hello, I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. We're on Facebook right now at VOA Asia. Also ahead, solar energy from down under. We hear from a U.S. congressman following a visit to Asia. An Australian space expert on your flight to the moon. Waiting for an eclipse, a drop in Zika. It's all on today's VOA Asia. The United States will step up pressure on China to ensure that it enforces sanctions against North Korea in the wake of Pyongyang's recent missile launch. That, according to U.S. Ambassador to the United Nations, Nikki Haley, on Sunday. Haley told CBS television that while the United States wants to avoid conflict, it is committed to halting North Korea's nuclear drive.
The fact that they launched a ICBM test is hugely dangerous, not just for us, but for so many of our friends in the world.
China is North Korea's biggest ally and trading partner. So far, China has expressed its condemnation of the recent launch along with other countries, calling it a flagrant violation of United Nations resolutions. China has not, however, said anything definitive regarding sanctions. At an emergency United Nations Security Council meeting on North Korea Wednesday, Haley said a new draft resolution would be circulated among council members in the coming days, and she addressed the trade link with North Korea.
Make no mistake, North Korea's launch of an ICBM is a clear and sharp military escalation. The North Korean regime openly states that its missiles are intended to deliver nuclear weapons to strike cities in the United States, South Korea, and Japan. And now it has greater capacity to do so. In truth, it is not only the United States and our allies that are threatened. North Korea's destabilizing escalation is a threat to all nations in the region and beyond. Their actions are quickly closing off the possibility of a diplomatic solution. The United States is prepared to use the full range of our capabilities to defend ourselves and our allies. One of our capabilities lies with our considerable military forces. We will use them if we must, but we prefer not to have to go in that direction. We have other methods of addressing those who threaten us and of addressing those who supply the threats. We have great capabilities in the area of trade. President Trump has spoken repeatedly about this. There are countries that are allowing, even encouraging, trade with North Korea in violation of UN Security Council resolutions. Such countries would also like to continue their trade arrangements with the United States. That's not going to happen. Our attitude on trade changes when countries do not take international security threats seriously.
Last week, North Korea launched its first known intercontinental ballistic missile, complete with a reentry vehicle that would allow it to be equipped with a nuclear warhead. U.S. military officials estimate the missile had a range of 5,500 kilometers, potentially putting parts of the northwestern United States within Pyongyang's reach. These are among some of the top Asia stories trending on VOAnews.com. U.S. to increase pressure on China to enforce sanctions against North Korea. Heavy rains, search for missing continue in Japan. Chinese Nobel Peace Laureate, not too ill to travel. In India, drug makers try to stay a step ahead of the FDA. Indonesian movement encourages young people to skip dating. Find expanded coverage of these stories, and there's much more, on Facebook at VOA Asia and on our VOAnews.com website. VOA Asia continues. The world's largest lithium-ion battery will be installed in South Australia under an agreement between the American firm Tesla, the French company Neoen, and the state government. Officials have said Tesla boss Elon Musk has confirmed his promise to build the battery within 100 days or it would be delivered free. From Sydney, Phil Mercer reports.
The 100-megawatt battery will put South Australia at the forefront of global energy storage technology, according to the authorities. They hope the project will stabilize a shaky electricity network, which suffered a statewide blackout last September. The system also couldn't cope with huge demand during a summer heatwave, and there were more power cuts. Jay Wetherill is the South Australian State Premier.
South Australia is already leading the nation. Today we lead the world. We're announcing the world's largest lithium-ion battery. What it will do is completely transform the way in which renewable energy is stored and also stabilise the South Australian network, as well as putting downward pressure on prices.
Tesla's billionaire boss Elon Musk says that given its size, the project in South Australia does come with risk, but he believes the effort will be groundbreaking.
I'm pretty darn impressed with South Australia willing to do a project of this magnitude. That takes a lot of gumption. I do see this as something that the world will look at as an example of being able to do large-scale battery applications that really take a large amount of load.
The huge lithium battery is expected to be built by the end of the year. Musk has said he would complete the project for free if it's not completed within 100 days from the start of construction. It will be connected to a large wind farm in South Australia, which will charge the battery units. Energy will then be discharged when customers need it the most. Tesla says the project will produce enough electricity for 30,000 homes. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
Happening now in Asia, North Korean state media sharply criticized a recent bombing drill by two U.S. B-1 bombers on the Korean peninsula, calling it a dangerous move, raising the risk of nuclear war. Two U.S. Air Force bombers released inert weapons Friday on a training range in South Korea. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. We're happy you're with us today on VOA Asia. Periodically, VOA sits down with lawmakers on Capitol Hill to hear their thoughts and insights on global issues as they create policies and law that directly influences official U.S. interactions with countries in Asia. Today, we hear an excerpt from an interview conducted by VOA Mandarin reporter Peggy Chong with Congressman Austin Scott. He's a Republican from Georgia. Congressman Scott was also a member of a recent bipartisan congressional delegation that in May visited four nations in Asia to strengthen Indo-Asia-Pacific alliances. The delegation visited South Korea, Japan, Vietnam, and Singapore. Congressman Scott said the purpose of the trip is to reassure America's commitment in the Southeast Asian region and the willingness to work with international community to deal with the North Korean nuclear crisis. His comments begin with American student Otto Warmbier, who died shortly after his release from detention in North Korea.
With regard to the young man who recently passed away, should be a reminder to the world of just how brutal the North Korean regime is under Kim Jong-un. They not only treat foreigners that way, they treat their own people that way. They have no respect for human life or for other people. And so the question is, how do we address the situation of North Korea with the least amount of damage to people around the world? I believe it's going to require coordination not only between the United States and China, but Russia as well. And so, as I said, over 50% of the world population lives within pretty close proximity to North Korea. South Korea, Seoul, is obviously very close. Is within artillery range of North Korea, one of the most densely populated cities in the world. And so we're going to continue to work with the other countries that will work with us to try to solve these problems. I wish that China were more aggressive than they have been. When we were at the Shangri-La Dialogue, I had the opportunity to speak with the Chinese general there about that. I'm not sure that China has the influence over North Korea that the rest of the world believes China has. I think they recognize Kim Jong-un as a threat. I think they recognize that if something happens with regard to North Korea, that it will have a negative impact on China as well as every other country, not only in that region, but the world. And I do think that there is a desire from them to help. I'm not sure that they know exactly how to do it at this stage with somebody of his demeanor and his attitude.
Another issue in the South and the Asia Pacific, a big issue, is the China's actions in the South China Sea, and obviously it's one of the main topics mm-hmm. of discussion during the Shangri-La dialogue.
Sure.
Coming away from those discussions with other Asian leaders, how do you feel mm-hmm. about this issue?
The thing that was reassuring to me, the most reassuring to me, was the response of the other leadership in Asia and their desire to resist China with regard to the expansion. So none of the other countries believe that China is operating in good faith. This is obviously a challenge to long-established international law and order. And I think what you will see is a renewed resolve from not only the United States, but the countries in that Asia-Pacific region to stop this, and not only to stop it, but to reverse it. China is obviously a global power, and responsibility comes with being a global power, and part of that responsibility is that you are willing to abide by the long-established laws of the sea. And so we need, that's all that we ask of China, is that they abide by the laws of the sea.
During your visit, you also visited Vietnam, and during that visit, you were joined by Senator McCain, and you
yes,
visited
ma'am.
The Hua Lo prison, so-called Hanoi Hilton.
Yes, ma'am.
That was where Senator McCain was held and other U.S. soldiers were held mm-hmm. as POW during the Vietnam War. Mm-hmm. Can you share us your thoughts on after the visit?
It's hard to describe. My grandfather was a POW in World War II, and so I'm... have a particular affection for those men and women who have been through that. But to be there with Senator McCain in the prison, it's just something that there really aren't words to describe the emotions of listening to him tell the story in that location where it actually happened. It's one of those things where you just have to be there, and it'll be an experience that I'll remember the rest of my life.
U.S. and China are two big superpowers in the Asia Pacific. Going forward, how do you think the U.S. should deal with the relationship with China and in this area mm-hmm. of security? What do you see are the challenges and opportunities?
So there are certainly areas where we have common interests, even though we don't necessarily share the same values. In areas where we have common interests, I think that you'll see the leadership of our countries work together. In areas where we don't have common interests, or where our interests are opposing each other, I think you'll see the U.S. Continue to establish partnerships, to reaffirm those partnerships, and you will see, I believe, more coordinated military exercises with our partner nations in that part of the world, just as a show of our resolve as the United States for maintaining those international laws of the sea and our partnership with the other countries in Southeast Asia.
What is your hope for U.S.-China relations going forward?
You know, I would hope that with the leadership of the countries could find where we have those common interests, and that we could work to resolve the problems. Obviously, a situation like North Korea requires the United States and China, and quite honestly, Russia as well, probably to work together to resolve that situation. The best solution is always a negotiation. And when negotiations don't work, then obviously hard power has to be used. The only way soft power works is if we have the support of China and of the other countries in the world, including Russia, I believe, in resolving the issues. So our hope is always to use soft power, but I can assure you the United States is willing to use hard power if necessary to protect its citizens. and its friends and allies.
Thank you so much, Congressman Scott, for your time.
Thank you, ma'am.
Our thanks to Congressman Austin Scott for speaking with VOA and Mandarin reporter Peggy Chong for sharing his comments with us. You're listening to VOA Asia.
From Pink to Pitbull, Beyonce to Bruno Mars, the hits live here on the Top 20 Countdown. Hi, I'm Ray McDonald, and for the past 30 years, I've been counting down the very best of the Billboard Hot 100 Pop Singles Chart. The hit list never sleeps, so don't you miss a moment of the action. Join me every Thursday for the Top 20 Countdown, right here and worldwide on the Voice of America.
This news alert from VOA Asia: two Western doctors who visited ailing Nobel Peace Laureate Liu Xiaoboa in a Chinese hospital say it's not too late for him to travel overseas for medical treatment. However, the doctors say any medical evacuation for the 61-year-old Liu would have to take place as quickly as possible. You'll find the latest updates on VOA Asia Facebook. This is VOA Asia. VOA Asia continues. The private U.S.-based Space Exploration Technologies Corporation, known as SpaceX, said it's planning to launch at least two passengers on a tourist trip around the moon as early as late 2018. CEO Elon Musk declined to reveal the identities of the passengers or how much they've paid, except to say that their deposit was substantial. It would represent the first privately funded journey beyond Earth's orbit with a tentative flight plan that includes a trip of up to 640,000 kilometers from Earth, past the moon, and back for a parachute landing. The trajectory would be similar to that of the U.S. NASA Apollo lunar missions. Independent Australian space analyst Morris Jones tells VOA's Victor Beatty the rocket will likely be SpaceX's Falcon Heavy rocket.
Falcon Heavy uses the same type of rocket stages and engines, but it basically puts three stages together, almost like a cricket wicket, to give you extra power during launch.
Is the timeline of late 2018 for this first mission rather ambitious in your view?
I think it's too ambitious, and I really don't think that they're going to meet that deadline, or if they try to meet that deadline, they'll end up compromising on safety. I think they really didn't think it out well enough.
Elon Musk, the CEO of SpaceX, said he thinks there's a market for one or two of these missions each year.
I think that there are a lot of very rich people out there in the world who would really love to fly to the moon. So I think when he talks about a market for these services, it's not a very large market, but it could be enough for, say, half a dozen flights over a decade.
Would these be similar to the NASA Apollo missions that went to the moon and back?
These are going to be far less ambitious than the Apollo mission. They won't land on the moon. They won't even go into orbit around the moon. What they will do is they will fly what's known as a free return trajectory, where you head out to the moon, you fly around the far side of the moon, and you use the moon's gravity to throw the spacecraft back to Earth. The crew of Apollo 13 did this to get back to Earth quickly in an emergency. And the whole flight will take roughly a week.
He says that there will be extensive training involved. What kind of training would passengers have to go through?
I think a lot of it will mirror some of the training that conventional astronauts go through, in the sense that they'll be thrown through weightlessness training and acceleration and maybe a bit of survival training. The main difference is that they will not need to learn how to pilot the spacecraft. The spacecraft will be piloted automatically and probably with some updates from ground control. They'll need to know how to take care of themselves and their personal needs in space, eating, going to the bathroom. But all things considered, it won't take a lot of training, I feel, to get ready for a mission like this.
Morris Jones says he believes such trips around the moon could cost up to $50 million per passenger. Start saving now. Although the cost would eventually go down. Elon Musk, whose company is planning to first launch manned flights to the International Space Station, has indicated his long-term goal is to prepare for eventual human flights to Mars, and the lunar flights represent an interim step. Developing at this hour in Asia, the UN Cultural Organization added an ancient temple site in Cambodia to its World Heritage List, bringing the number of heritage sites in Southeast Asia to three. Sambor Prekuk, or Temple of the Richness of the Forest in the Khmer language, is home to numerous temples, 10 of which are octagonal. Visit VOA Asia Facebook for great features and top news. This is VOA Asia. Now on VOA Asia, the first coast-to-coast total solar eclipse in the United States in 99 years will be occurring next month, and folks in a small rural town in southwestern Kentucky are very excited. Faith Lapidus tells us why.
At 1:24 in the afternoon on August 21st, the sky over Hopkinsville, Kentucky will grow dark as the moon slides across the sun.
Well, what makes Hopkinsville so special for this total solar eclipse experience is we've earned the designation as the point of greatest eclipse. And what that means is when the total solar eclipse occurs, the moon will most fully cover the sun right here just north of Hopkinsville, Kentucky. So it provides a unique scientific experience for all of these eclipse chasers from all over the world.
Mayor Carter Hendricks says his town is ready for its day in the sun, or not in the sun.
Quickly became apparent that Hopkinsville would be the center of the universe, so to speak, for this total solar eclipse, because we knew we had one of the points of longest durations. I think we're actually second longest duration, by a hundredth of a second.
The darkness over the rolling farmland will last for about 2 minutes and 40 seconds. Hopkinsville learned of its place in the path of totality about 10 years ago and has spent more than $500,000 preparing for the influx of eclipse chasers. The town already has the eclipse spirit.
I would say anticipation, excitement, maybe a little bit of anxiety as we think about 100,000 people coming into a community of 30,000 people. But the real energy is people are excited. They're excited that Hopkinsville is on the international map. They're excited to play host to visitors from all over the world.
He hopes those visitors will get a taste of the region's culture, heritage, and history, and will want to come back and experience it in the sunshine. I'm Faith Lapidus, VOA News.
The number of cases of Zika virus is way down around the world this year. VOA's Kevin Enix tells us instead of treating new cases, doctors and health workers and researchers are now freer to track and help those children who are infected with microcephaly. It's a disease caused by Zika-carrying mosquitoes.
Arthur is one of the more than 2,000 Brazilian babies with microcephaly caused by Brazil's Zika virus outbreak. Doctors say his brain is developing much more slowly than other children his age, and his mother has had to quit her job to care for him. But doctors also say that therapy is improving Arthur's chances to live a full life.
First, we learned that it's not just microcephaly, which is the tip of the iceberg and perhaps the most serious neurological alteration. We identified many other changes that can be related to infection by the virus during pregnancy. And the other thing we have noticed is that despite the seriousness of the affliction, these children are developing well. They are able, with the right stimulation, to live well during their first year.
Researchers were worried that Zika would return this summer, but so far the number of cases is down everywhere.
Here is where we normally receive new cases. This year we have not been given any new cases. We have had no cases of Zika or other mosquito-borne diseases, neither Zika, chikungunya, or dengue fevers.
A drier than normal summer and natural resistance may also be helping keep Zika numbers down.
It is possible that a great epidemic did not take place in the big cities that had it in 2015 and 2016 due to the fact that a great part of the population already had antibodies, which makes transmission more difficult and does not create an epidemic.
Whatever the reason, Brazilian health authorities welcome the fact that new cases of Zika are down by 95%, as well as the microcephaly associated with the virus. For babies like Arthur, Zika and microcephaly will always be with them, but Arthur's mother hopes for the best.
I believe Arthur will do everything. He will play ball. He will have a relationship. I know an 18-year-old girl who has microcephaly, and she is the first model in the world with microcephaly. She inspires me very much.
The Brazilian government is working to expand services and financial support for children and the families affected by Zika and microcephaly. Kevin Enix, VOA News.
You've been listening to VOA Asia. Our program is available on iTunes and SoundCloud, on our website, of course, and on VOA Asia Facebook, where you can send us a message and let us know what's on your mind. We'd love to hear from you. Send us an email as well at voaasia@voanews.com. Our director is Tracy Carter, engineer Daryl Smith, managing editor Diane Gao. Ali Ogden and David Byrd are part of our VOA Asia team. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. We hope you have a great day.